So next, I will move to the public comment period, and I'm now closing the public comment speaker cards. And I will start 3 minutes with Ron Weitzman, and after that will be David Phillies.
Good morning, Chairman Wolf and board members. I'm Ron Weitzman, President of the Water Ratepayers Association of the Monterey Peninsula, RAMP, WRAMP for short. This will be, these remarks. Yes?
Okay, that.
No, this is public comment.
Right, but if the comments.
No, it's about procedure. These are procedural comments. I have some other comments to make.
Yeah, because you also have a speaker card specifically for item 16, so.
Yeah, I do have another one for item 16, but this is procedural.
Okay.
The Pure Water Monterey EIR certified on 8 October 2015 lacked a description of the bridge proposed to be built to convey product water over Highway 68. As well as CEQA-required impact and alternative analyses. Since 23 October 2015, CalAM has not submitted a bridge design to Caltrans, which denied a permit for the design submitted prior to that date. Without a bridge design, Caltrans cannot determine impacts to a state-designated scenic highway or schedule community meetings to discuss any proposal for a bridge that must bear a constant load of 80 tons of water. Without assessment of impacts, including safety and aesthetics, Caltrans cannot issue a permit for the construction of a bridge. Assessment of impacts, including safer and less environmentally intrusive non-bridge alternatives, would require a subsequent EIR. Without a subsequent EIR and permits from Caltrans for a pipeline bridge over Highway 68 or a non-bridge alternative, no pipeline can be completed. Without a completed pipeline, there can be no water conveyance system for Pure Water Monterey. Until there is approval for a pipeline bridge or a non-bridge route, permits from you could be premature and unnecessarily costly to ratepayers. Thank you. I'll have more to say on the item 16 later. Thank you.
You know, I still think your comments overlap with this upcoming item.
Right, and if you do want those comments in the record for the Pure Water Monterey item, you'll need to repeat them during that item. Those comments will not be during the record. This isn't the time for comments yet on Pure Water Monterey. This is just general comments.
These are general.
But they were about Pure Water Monterey, so if you would like to address the board on that matter, you'll have to repeat them when we call for comments on Pure Water Monterey. No. You'll have 3 minutes, but you can't use somebody else's 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Next will be David Phillies, followed by Mary Klopel.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the board. My name is David Phillies. I'm the manager of the Elkhorn Slough Reserve, the wetland immediately south of us here. And so I'm here to just give an update of how the winter went at the Elkhorn Slough. Extensive rain, lots of trees down, loss of power. But most significantly is that we've had a couple of pretty significant discharges of sediment into the wetlands and to an ephemeral stream from some adjacent farming operations. And these are steep-sided strawberry farms that regularly discharge sediment. They have inadequate sediment basins on their property. In both cases, it's two separate sites. In both cases, they closed the county road. It was unsafe to travel on the road and, in fact, significantly impact two county roads that are now closed, one will cost over $1 million to repair. So there was no access to Kirby Park. There was no access to the reserve from the south. We've brought this to the attention of various folks, and a complaint was filed by a private organization, and your staff was here this week to take a look at these two sites. It's my understanding the county has cited the landowner, two separate landowners, and is requiring them to build adequate sediment ponds on site to contain their sediment and to contain as much as possible the water coming under the reserve. The one to the south of the reserve entrance is probably about 3,000 cubic yards. It went destroyed the road, smothered oak woodland with both Santa Cruz long-toed salamander and California tiger salamander, red-legged frogs present in that area, and went down to an ephemeral stream that enters the Elkhorn Slough during wet years. The other site comes across a county road. That one's probably about 5,000 cubic yards of sediment. It goes directly into a pickleweed wetland that we manage and has significantly altered the habitat in the corner of that wetland. And the area has been colonized with willow thickets, and so we have a habitat conversion taking place in that wetland. So just wanted to bring that to your attention. We appreciate your attention and stewardship of the Elkhorn Slough, and always willing to provide information and get you out on site whenever you need to for yourselves or your staff.
Thank you. It's disturbing. And I assume you'd have a collection of photos that, illustrate what took place.
Do you have them with you?
I do not have those with me. I've shared them with staff, and so we'll make sure that they're available for your viewing.
Chair Wolf, I'm just curious about whether we have any erosion control requirements in our irrigated lands permit. I just don't recall right now. Are you aware of any requirement to control sediment?
I'll defer to staff, but I do know that counties generally have ordinance in terms of grading and the containment of, sediment migration. And could you speak on that?
I'm not intimately familiar with their ordinances, but I know it was enough that the landowner was issued a notice of violation that they were not adequately keeping their sediment on site. And so they intend to work with them to design and construct such ponds on both properties.
Okay. Staff, do you have any Mr. Rose? I know you're going through microphone withdrawal, so this is your opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Christopher Rose with the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program. I'm sorry, I walked in just a moment ago. Are you Mr. Moss?
No.
Okay.
Mr. Moss is with the county.
Very good. Okay. Our staff went to the site yesterday, and we have pictures of the site, and we will be following up on this. The Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program Agricultural Order does have provisions in it that requires sediment control. So we will be following up and making sure that the order is complied with. And we also have photos here of this site, one page of photos, if you'd like.
So, Chris, this probably isn't your bailiwick, but because you probably will be the point person with the county, or at least have some say in how the irrigated lands conditions are play into how this moves forward. But I'm also interested, and I think, Mr. Robertson, you said something about the county. having some conditions for sediment, controlling sediment. Chair Wolf brought up the issue of grading and so forth. And I'm interested, and I mentioned it yesterday when this came up, if there is any aspect of the stormwater program that the county is required to act on this issue from several directions. So if the county has to move because of stormwater violations, what part of our program touches, and would our staff person for stormwater get involved with this discussion?
Sure. Typically, Ms. Hunter, when we go about following up on these types of things, we are not only speaking internally with other programs to see if there's any violations to any other provisions in other programs, such as stormwater, 401, other things, but then we're also following up with our other agencies, county, and any other municipality that may be part of the solution.
Good. I'm glad to hear that because I know Santa Cruz County is probably paying attention to this. Clearly, it's a major disruption to the right. area, not only the habitat impacts, but the disruption of the road closures. So I just want to be sure we're including everything we can to help the county take action.
Sure. Yeah, you bet. I mean, nobody is fully staffed to handle all of these things. And in a rainy year like we've had this year, we need to leverage all of our efforts within the multiple agencies, and that's what we do under these situations.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm just going to add to this that we're not going to look at the photos right now, as they may be used in evidence for some, potentially for some future enforcement case.
Okay, fair enough. Mr. Johnson, and just then brief, Mayor Delgado.
Just briefly, first of all, just a minor correction, Dr. Hunter, it's Monterey County. It's not Santa Cruz. And I had a brief discussion with Mr. Robertson yesterday about this. I'm assuming that this falls under our authority to regulate discharges to the waters of the state, and that this would be a discharge. And while the county has the ability to issue notices of violation, they have very limited statutory authority. They have a limited hammer. They have very limited statutory authority to fine. And so my suggestion to Mr. Robertson would be that we work with the county and offer to be the bad cop in this situation, and that certainly has the potential to get much more expedited action from the landowner. The county can cite them, but the county can't really fine them in the way that we can, because they operate under different statutory authorities.
Mayor Delgado?
Yeah, if damage like this happens that can be tied to something we oversee, such as the strawberry field irrigation, do we then go to their farm plans and best management practices on paper that document what they say they're doing? And if those items that have been written down, when we inspect those documents, haven't been done and have led to problems like this, is this where we go with the enforcement in order to enforce something under the ag order?
Mr. Robertson?
Allow Chris Rose to answer that question.
Yes, it is not only a provision in the ag order 2.0 and 3.0, but it's also it is supposed to be part of their farm plan and included in their farm plan, and that is absolutely one of the things that we look for when following up on something like this. Have you included provisions measures in your farm plan to, mitigate these sorts of problems? And if so, why not? And if not, then we require that they put them in there and work with us to demonstrate that is done.
So I don't have experience with roads being damaged and causing money to be spent to fix them due to an ag user.
Yeah.
As a board member, we have experience from oil spills, and there's costs associated with the harm done by those incidents. Does this incident, if it follows the way that we think it might, does that kind of go through a similar process, or is it wholly different?
A moment, please.
Good morning. Taya Tryon. The court recorder's gone, so Taya Tryon, enforcement coordinator for the Central Coast Water Board. We have also the ability to use 13385 of the water code, 13350, and in any discharge to U.S. Waters, and use the basin plan for violations such as this.
So does that look like what we do with oil spills?
Similar.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sediment is considered, we calculate the gallons of sediment that discharged, and it becomes a whole evaluation, but yeah, the details you won't hear.
I'm sorry?
We don't deal with enforcement in front of the board until it becomes an item in front
right.
of the board.
I was just at the
yeah, just general
high altitude level. Thank you.
Does that answer your question?
It does. Thank okay. you.
Great. Thank you, staff, for the clarification. And Mr. Philippe, thank you also for bringing this to our attention. And next public comment is Mary Klopal, which will be followed by Mr. Shimmick.
Yes, thank you. My name is Mari Klopal, and I want to thank you for your attention on the matter that was just covered. That's what I came to speak to you about. I am the co-chair and co-founder of an organization called Friends, Artists, and Neighbors of Elkhorn Slough, FANS. And I just want to read you our mission. We established back in 1999, we have about 300 members, and we're based in North Monterey County, but our membership extends far-reaching, out of state, because of the globally important, the importance of Elkhorn Slough. And our mission is as Friends, Artists, and Neighbors of Elkhorn Slough is an association of citizens committed to preserving and enhancing Elkhorn Slough through public education, citizen activism, and advocacy. We are dedicated to establishing and maintaining a management plan that will protect the environmental, cultural, and agricultural integrity of the slough and its surrounding watershed, and will restore, protect, and preserve Elkhorn Slough as a legacy for future generations. So we have been working really hard for about 17 years to try to encourage the county to adopt really strong policies that will protect Elkhorn Slough, but also to enforce them. And as a nearly 30-year resident of the watershed of Elkhorn Slough, I have been watching these two sites in particular become worse and worse and worse in spite of the county's involvement with farmers. So I had a longer presentation. Basically, I think everything's been covered. It's a very important place. It's very fragile. There's only 95% of all saltwater marshes like Elkhorn Slough have been lost to development already. It is the second largest saltwater marsh left in California. The next, the largest, is San Francisco Bay. So there is quite a difference in size. That is why there's such a huge difference in size, is because the rest have been lost. This is such an important place that just must be protected, and we really urge the board here, it sounds like that's hopefully will happen, to take this at the highest priority and ensure that the farming practices change permanently so that the slough can survive in perpetuity. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comment. And next, Mr. Shimmick, followed by David Costa.
I will be amazingly brief. This is essentially a Me Too. I was contacted by the attorney for Friends of Elkhorn Slough, and I think it's fair to say that Elkhorn Slough is near and dear to everyone in Monterey County's heart and maybe in the state's heart. You know, the water quality there is degraded but important. The habitats are degraded but important. And it's an important area for sea otters, which are near and dear to my organization's heart. So instead of repeating, Me Too. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shimmick. And I assume, Abby and Dave, that you're combining your presentation, right? And so the combined time will be 15 minutes.
So, hello, my name is Abby Taylor Silva. I'm the Vice President of Policy and Communications at the Grower Shipper Association of Central California, and I'm here today with David Costa of Costa Farms. We're here to talk to you about the Salinas River Maintenance Project that you, of course, have a 401 certification with the Monterey County Water Resources Agency on. Before we get to that, I want to touch just briefly on SGMA because we've been talking about it so much this morning and offer that I think it would be a wonderful opportunity for those who've been involved in the local process to come and speak to you at a future board meeting. I'll speak for myself and then I'm very proud of the process that we've gone through, and where we are today will be the first meeting of the joint powers authority that has been formed for most of the Salinas Valley groundwater basin. And that authority includes 11 board members. Those are going to be made up of a representative of a disadvantaged community or a mutual water company that serves residential customers. It'll be made up of an environmental seat, agricultural seats, public member, City of Salinas, South County City Representative, a GSA eligible agency, a PUC water service provider, and the like. And so we've really worked hard to bring stakeholders together from throughout the region, and we've put together one agency for most of the region. And like I said, we're proud of what we've done, and their first meeting is today. So I have submitted a few photos to the board, and I don't know if those are available to be shown up on the screen or not. They're just, and what these are just photos of some of the areas of the river, so you can see the effect of some of the work that's been done. So I'll speak to them when they're up. But as you know, in late 2013, the Nature Conservancy started meeting with local agricultural leaders and the Water Resources Agency of Monterey County to discuss a pilot project that focused on a multi-benefit approach that mitigates flooding but also protects species and habitat. And the result of that was a 12-mile pilot project that was put into place in 2014 and that is still continuing. That pilot project, alongside Anarundo, Donax, and Tamarisk removal programs spearheaded by Monterey County Resource Conservation District and with support from our local agricultural commissioner's office in Monterey County, was really just the beginning. The RCD and Water Resources received multi-year permits from state and federal governments, including our own, this year to conduct maintenance work along the 94-mile river channel corridor, which is almost entirely privately owned. And this project was really the result of quite a lot of collaboration. You heard us speak to you, I think, in July as RCD, the Nature Conservancy, and others. It took a lot of trust building and thinking outside of current processes. And the result is a new stream maintenance program following 8 years without one, and a real shared appreciation for a river management system that meets a variety of needs and requirements while also bringing flooding mitigation and recharge benefits to local landowners and operators, which, of course, is going to be important in the SGMA discussions. So we really want to thank the regional board staff for working diligently with Monterey County Water Resources to find solutions and issue a 401 permit. David Chartavoine, who is the general manager of Water Resources, is here today as well. And I want to shout out and thank his staff. They did a lot of very, very hard work working with stakeholders in the community on the 401 and the 404 permit, and also coordinating on the 1600 permit with Fish and Wildlife. This year, we were only able to work for about 3 weeks, and that was due to not receiving all the permits before the window in which work can be conducted. But regardless of that, 70.7 acres of secondary channel maintenance were conducted. I've had members express appreciation for the opportunity to work in the river again, especially in advance of the significant rains we've had this year. And it's important to remember, because the Salinas River is predominantly privately owned, that while this river work is beneficial to the community as a whole, it's really funded by those landowners and operators, and they're paying for their maintenance work, their costs to negotiate on the 1600 permit with Fish and Wildlife, and the costs to conduct considerable amounts of biological training and monitoring required to meet the 3 permit conditions. So just quickly, this is a photograph of work that was done to mitigate Arundo Donax. And then I have a couple of other photographs. And then right here you see waters entering the low flow channel of the Salinas River. This was in the Gonzales area. And then one more photograph. This shows you from the Gonzales Bridge facing downstream, which is northwest. These are secondary channels being fully activated after the January 2017 rains. So with that, I wanted to give David Costa a moment to come and speak to you. This was the first year in quite a few that he'd been able to conduct maintenance and talk to you about his experience.
Thank you. The area of the river that I worked on was about 80 feet wide. The first picture on the slideshow was from there. 80 feet wide is about 10 to 20 feet wider than the width of this room, in my estimation, and about a half a mile in length. Most of the area that we worked on was dead vegetation, you know, after the drought. We had worked in the channel after the flood in 95, but as Abby said, it's been about 8 years since there's been permits to work in the channel. The total cost of the work that I did in the channel was just over $16,000. The cost of the equipment that worked in the channel that I hired out was under $3,000. So I had about $13,000 that went to permits, fees, biologist training. We were required to have a biologist on site when we worked, in addition to the pre-work inspection. But each day before we worked in the channel, a biologist had to reinspect the site where we worked, make sure nothing changed overnight. Had to work in coordination with the equipment operator, working around any, you know, sensitive areas, anything that changed. My neighbor downstream that we worked together with had a wood rat nest that had to be moved, so it stopped his work, and he had to avoid that for a day until a biologist moved a wood rat nest away from the area they were working. Of course, after the high river flows, that nest is not there anymore either, and it's somewhere else. I think what I see in the channel now, I mean, it seems clear to me that there's improved flow through the braids where we've worked, that in general the areas that are worked are kind of parallel to the channel, but they're kind of in braids. They're not starting from the low flow channel and just sweeping everything. I mean, there was no dozer work involved. Our entire work was with a mower. The neighbor's work was with a mower and a disc to turn up roots to keep roots from regerminating regrowing in his work site. But our work site would be what I would call like a step up from the low flow channel, you know, 3 to 5 feet higher elevation and kind of, you know, parallel to, but in kind of a braided manner to the channel that was outlined by the biologists and everybody involved with the permit work. One thing I think we really see now, looking around after the flows that we've had here this winter, is just a lot of dead vegetation matted up from other areas of the river. You see them around all the bridge pillars at the highway crossings, at the county road crossings. You see them matted up in areas out in the river, and there's no question that dead vegetation will be something that'll need to be dealt with in the future, and I would hope that as, you know, the permits continue to evolve, that it doesn't get any more difficult to do things that are prudent and necessary, because I already, you know, shared the example of what the costs were outside of the physical work that was done in the channel. I think what we see over time, what we've been seeing is decreased flows at similar elevations of the water in the channel over the, you know, last several years, and a longer period than several years. And I think that ranches that I'm aware of, growers that I know that had issues with the river this winter have made the statement that the flows this year were on the order of, you know, maybe 30% less than the flows that caused those same kind of issues in years past. And I think that's kind of, you know, one of the concerns is that if we went back, not during the flood year, but in some of our higher flow years after that, some of the El Nino years with big flows, and we know from, you know, the stream gauge history what kind of flows we passed, like in 97, 98. I know there are some areas that had, you know, very similar, you know, flooding and backwater issues. They're not areas that are farmed any closer to the river than they were back in those periods, but yet the flows through the stream gauges are at substantially lower numbers.
Can you ask you a question in that regard?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, don't worry about the timer. Would that be caused due to added infiltration, where you then have lower flow because more water is infiltrating in the ground rather than flowing on the surface because you don't have saturated soil below?
No, I think that that it's entirely related to, you know, the volume in the channel. I think I'm you know, trying to describe you know, an inability to pass that's raising you know, an elevation, a water elevation, you know, in the channel. I think what you would see, you know, in the valley, say working from upstream to downstream, is that, you know, high flows and gauges farther upstream don't show downstream for a lot of reasons. The percolation through the length of that channel is one reason, and there's also kind of the moderation as you know, the peaks and lows in flow from different streams along the way kind of moderate, and the peaks come off, but the bottoms come up, and things kind of find, you know, their middle ground. And so that is another factor that would lead to lower stream flow readings, you know, downstream. But one grower in particular shared that, you know, he had similar issues this year with about an 8 or 9,000 CFS flow that he had with a 15,000 CFS flow several years ago. So that's the kind of story I'm trying to share with you, is that kind of anecdotal evidence from somebody like that.
What are the impacts that you want us to understand from those changes, the reduced flow that you're seeing now? What are the impacts that you're concerned about?
Well, I think at the very least, if you cross the highway bridge at Soledad or King City, you see a river flow that's almost parallel to the bridge versus perpendicular or some angle, you know, where it used to cross under the bridge. And it changes the whole, you know, public, you know, threat scenario to highway closures. The highway bridge in Soledad got replaced after 95 or the El Nino year when, you know, bridge piling sunk. But I think you get run into some of those kind of threats. In 95, there was only, I think, there was a period of time, a day or two after the flood in 95, there's only one crossing from the peninsula to the valley side of the river, and that was down at the Arroyo Seco Bridge in Soledad, because Highway 1 was closed, Highway 68 was closed, Gonzales River Road was closed, Chular Bridge was closed, because, you know, if water's going to take out a bridge or and not be able to pass under it, and it's going to work its way around it. So I look at some of those kind of threats to the, you know, public safety and emergency services, but also in the channel, you just start to look at areas that used to pass, you know, very substantial flows, and they don't. So it leads to, you know, pressure on levees or you know, flooding. The other thing it leads to is just the, you know, destroyment of the habitat that used to be in the river. You can take this, you know,
right.
You know, nobody's trying to clean sweep the river by any means. We, like I said, we worked on 80 to 100 feet, I think was a pretty similar number in a lot of, you know, a lot of places. But if things get, I don't want to say plugged up, but if things get pent up and the elevations build and then all of a sudden you have this big flush down the channel, then all the vegetation that you're trying to save all of a sudden is destroyed and washed away too. So there's a balance in there somewhere that you're trying to, you know, maintain what's there, and you're trying to accomplish, you know, several things with your work.
So I'm just trying to understand do you see the Salinas River project having positive impacts in managing stream flow? And so that's one part of it. And the second part is you're concerned that with the shift from the drought to high peak flows or rain events, that this vegetative matter that's now moving, being transported down the channel, are you worried that there are permitting issues that would prevent you from doing any kind of maintenance to eliminate that threat? Is that what I'm just trying to be sure I'm clear?
I think the first part, I would say that once we're able to connect the dots in the river, I think we're definitely going to see an improved flow. I think everybody's trying to improve flow without having an impact on habitat. So we've lifted up under trees without removing trees. We have minimum sizes of trees or vegetation that can be dealt with. So timing was an issue this year with the lateness of the permit from the Fish and Wildlife mm-hmm. Department. So that's a challenge. But I think once we're trying to, I almost say minimally increase flows or maintain flows that used to, occur in the channel.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I'll start all the way in the back with Mr. Johnson.
Yeah, just a quick question. You said that you had talked to a grower who said that he was experiencing the same problems at 8,000 CFS that he had experienced at 15,000 before. Where is that grower in relation to the channel work that's been done? I'm trying to understand if this is pre or post channel clearing.
I would say he's in the middle. He's had operations on either side of him, that have done work.
And is there work in his section of the channel that's been done as well?
I don't know specifically his adjacent, property owners. I can't answer that question.
Thank you. Mayor Delgado?
Yeah, Abby, when you and I talked about a year ago about this, I was glad that computer simulations done by the TNC to determine where to put stream maintenance corridors seemed to be correlating well with growers' understanding of problem sites, and the small flows that were experienced in 2016 seemed to be working through those stream maintenance channels the way that the models suggested they would help the ranchers. And the ranchers were – ranchers. The growers were thankful that it was working, so they weren't having flood issues. This being a much larger flood year, how have those stream maintenance nick points or trouble points held up?
So, and I'll let Dave speak to his experience as well, but I'll say just anecdotally that I've heard from members in RMU-1, which is more the King City-San Ardo area, RMU-3, and then in RMU-6, and all of them have said that they've In some cases, it did mimic the model, right? I did get some feedback, that with the secondary channels, in some cases they go up many, many feet and come back down. And there was, as they were being built, people thought, gosh, how is this going to work? And they actually activated very well, and it made a lot of sense when they did. I think that there was, in certain areas, even people who did work, they did experience some flooding. But I thought a lot of that has to do with timing of the rains and reservoir releases and all of that happening at the same time. So I think a lot of your question is in how did it actually work in lieu of the model, with using the model. I think a lot of that will be analysis that's currently being conducted by Water Resources, and we're going to know more in the coming months. But anecdotally on the ground, I am hearing from people who were pleasantly surprised with how well the secondary channels ended up working when they were activated.
All right. Except for Dave's point about delayed permit approvals, et cetera, has there been any downside to this stream maintenance initiative?
I think it's an expensive endeavor, right? And Dave spoke to that, and I did as well. It's
been long.
I mean, of course, we've had there've been a lot of years in between, and so there's work that needs to be done now, and that's part of why it's expensive, right? There's, as you're kind of going into an area that hadn't had maintenance done, and you're looking at habitat, those first couple of years are going to be more expensive, and then it should even out a little bit more as time goes on. The training component for the biologists and for our members who are doing work, there's a lot of learning that's going on. There's expense to that. There's time to that. But I think generally people are pleased to have an opportunity to work in the river. And so, no, I think overall it's been positive.
So do you think that the efforts to date and the results from those will result in increased trust in the process by landowners and increased participation in the percentage of landowners participating?
I think so. I think we're already hearing people who are saying, gosh, you know, I didn't get to work this year. That window being very short, you know, definitely contributed to some. And some, I think, were just sort of watching the process. And I think we will see more people working in conducting maintenance in their secondary channels this year, for sure.
All right. Yeah. Thank you for all your leadership in this.
Ms. Grape?
Yeah, I remember hearing about this at the July board meeting, and obviously I'm new to this whole process here a year in. But we took an iterative sort of approach to this project, as I recall, right? So we're going to be getting updates, and there's some flexibility built in to integrate lessons learned along the way. Is that correct? Okay, so I'm very excited to hear that people are pleased and that this is moving forward, and thanks for the clarification. I was a little bit confused, and thanks to Board Member Hunter for asking those good questions. It was very helpful. So thank you for the update. Appreciate it.
Mr. Young?
So, Mr. Costa, I think I heard you use the figure $13,000. Was that for the permitting part, for just your portion of this?
For my portion that I worked on, it was everything but the tractor work for the mower.
Okay.
So that was all the permits, all the fees, all the biologist time. The work that I did was less than 2 days.
It was
like 14 hours of work that the tractor operated out there. So I'm just trying to put it in that kind of...
Well, and my question then is there some way that we can assist in streamlining the permitting so that that money gets kind of spread over a greater distance amongst landowners that are going to participate in this?
Well, I mean, I think the answer to that is yes. Abby can expand on that. But I think that we also, you know, have an expectation that the work that we've done with biologists and RCD, that next year some of that will be repeat work. Some of the training will be faster, shorter, or won't be necessary if we have the same people back on site. So that's the kind of thing that we would talk to, you know, to those groups about. Yeah. I'm just hoping it doesn't get any worse than that. Part of the reason I brought that up is, you know, please don't create more hurdles or.
Well, I'd like to see if we can't, you know, make it more, make the permitting more efficient at the same time. Not that it shouldn't get any worse, you're right, but I would hope that there are some economies of scale that you can capture going year to year to year.
And we, you know, in fact, on that topic, I know with State Board Member Moore, we had discussions about, in a way, the high cost of permitting to do the right thing, and you know, you would think logically that you want to incentivize people to do the right thing, but when you start layering, you know, a proportionality of cost of permitting, it does raise issue. And I know we had this conversation when we established the, you know, wetland restoration conversation we had at the state board level, making eye contact with Mr. Moore on that topic. And I think there is a good point there is you know, the cost of the permits. And that's probably... Oh, I can't remember some of the details, but you know, I know there were issues of how to absorb the cost of the permits. Do you recall, John?
No, not specifically. No, but this is a constant topic right now for us, with respect to its agendized for the coming chairs meeting in April, how to not let our regulatory framework and cost get in the way of those who are trying to do the right thing, how to incentivize where we can, for those who are positioned to do the right thing, how do we minimize the burden on them or create a more efficient way for them to get out and do that?
May I interject? Is there some sort of a permit streamlining or bundling approach?
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing?
That's exactly where the conversation is at. And actually this region is really trying to push that into reality with respect to a bunch of general orders that are in play. Here's another example where we have an opportunity to figure out how to make it simpler for people who are trying to implement protective strategies.
Yeah, I think that'd be helpful to just bundle and have sort of a one-stop shop experience.
I heard a cost for biologists to do inspections. Is there a cost coming to the regional board?
No. So, well, there is a cost to gain the permit from the regional board. That was $90,000. That was actually paid by Monterey County Water Resources Agency as they hold the 401 permit. Of course, that's paid through their taxes to landowners, which our members are paying, of course. But it does – that $90,000 was paid by Monterey County Water Resources.
And for the full 94 miles?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then what we're chatting about on the – permit is really the 1600 permit. That's a lot of the costs the growers are paying directly through the RCD. And then, so there have been discussions and negotiations with Fish and Wildlife on the 1600 permit, further refining that. And that's what they're continuing to pay for and to assist with. So I think that's part of what Dave is paying for. But then the biological work is very expensive. That's you know, far and above what just about anything else is. And again, I think that any kind of streamlining of the three permits is much appreciated because, of course, we have the 404 from Army Corps, the 401 from you, and the 1600 from Fish and Wildlife. Working to make sure that all of those are being operated appropriately, you know, that's where the biologists really come in. And again, it's more expensive when you first start doing work, and it should be less so. But as much as we can streamline and learn from what we've done and take all the good information we gain and then further streamline, further make it make sense for the system, I know that would be very appreciated.
Well, and I would add, too, just, you know, efficient processing of permits. I understand when there's issues, and when, you know, things need to slow down when they need to slow down, but you know when time is of the essence. Because I would assume that you know if there was flow in the river, they would be looking to cease flows like they used to do years ago for this window of work in the fall. There used to be a 6-week window when they would slow or stop releases to allow for that maintenance. It wasn't an issue this year because the river channel has been dry for a year and a half. We've only had 2 weeks of flow in the last year and a half up until January of this year. So you know. Eliminating, and I'm not aware that there were any, but just in going forward, just always trying to make sure that there's just efficient processing and eliminating unnecessary delays, I guess I would say.
Okay. So I'm just going to wrap up a little bit this update since this was informational for us. So a question that I have is, you know, this project had two aspects to it. One of them is, you know, flood protection, but the other one is aquatic benefit, and there was a lot of conversation about, you know, steelhead trouts. So anecdotally or otherwise, any updates if we have, you know, we had sightings of steelhead, and I don't know if one of you or Mr. Schimmick has a little pulse on where we are with the fish, because ultimately that was one of the environmental goals here. You know?
I don't have any updates at this time. I think that we'll look to water resources in their reports and such and the actually on the full river system, and they do a lot of monitoring in line with their Salinas Valley Water Project.
Steve, any knowledge? Well, thank you for that input, Steve. I appreciate it.
If I might just conclude, I do want to say, you know, we've talked a lot about permits and such today. The regional board and your 401 permit, your staff really worked hard to continuously communicate with staff of water resources and stakeholders as this permit was being built. Things were done on time, and we really appreciate their dedication. So we just want you to know that they did a very good job.
Okay. Thank you. So at this time, we will take a 15-minute break, and after that we will start item 16. So let's see. It is 5 past, so at 11:20. Thank you.